gmail.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the second half of the show today is Linda Clark Gilmore. She's the director of Utah's Office of Rural Development, and she's also the task force leader for the state's drought response. And so, Linda, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for the invitation.
So let's start with this. You know, we are talking about this drought response task force. Tell us how this came to be and about your role in it.
So there is an official team of scientists from Department of Natural Resources and NOAA that monitor the precipitation in the state in an ongoing way. They have 150 different precipitation monitors around the state. And when they get to a certain threshold, this committee, this drought response committee, kicks in. And so it brings together several different organizations. I'll just read them so you understand that, you know, we're not all experts in droughts, but we have to become a tool for the state to identify the impact of the drought around the state.
And I'll just point out to our listeners that Linda is currently holding like this massive sheet, this massive flow chart of different organizations and parties involved in this. It looks extensive.
Okay. Right. So we have municipal water and sewer systems, agriculture, community and economic development, the Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands, and wildlife resources, and also the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. And all these different people bring different perspectives to the table. And then our task was, and we have a list of people we have to go out and contact and ask them, what has been the impact in your area? And since I'm over rural development, it was actually something I was looking forward to contact all these counties and ask them, what was the impact? Has there been an impact in your county? And in fact, there has been a significant impact. There are some communities that I know of, at least one on the West Desert, where their municipal water system, they ended up having to go to a secondary water system. We know of a lot of people that in agriculture where their wells have gone dry. So I loved listening to your former speaker when she was talking about caribou and the impact to them. Eastern Summit County still has agriculture, and I talked to the Commissioner of Agriculture, who is also one of these team leaders, and she said the animals are coming off, the calves are coming off about 70 pounds lighter.
Wow.
So that's just a dry feed source, and that's our food supply. So we're all interconnected. You can't just say, you know, I'm only interested in this part of it. Wildfires are a big part of a drought.
Oh, sure. And again, that flowchart with all those different departments, divisions is testimony to how precious water is to the state and the role that water, adequate amounts of water, play in our biology and our economy.
Yes, without question. And, you know, maybe I could address Summit County just a little bit and the impact that we see there. We do know that the snow totals have gone down some. And you look at that's a big industry in Summit County, if not the largest industry. And there are new season pass systems, which everybody's probably aware of, the EPIC and the ICON.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives people in Texas or Massachusetts an opportunity to watch the weather and decide where they're going to go for their ski vacations.
Mm.
So, you know, every one of our businesses and industries is affected by this. But then what is the county doing to respond to that? And I had a chance to talk to Jeff Jones this morning, and the council members and their economic development director are actually meeting with the governor this week and presenting their strategic economic development plan. And there are some responses to this. For example, the industries that are dependent on snow are trying to extend their seasons and provide other activities that are here. So there are deliberate actions by the county. Another one is diversification. So if you're completely dependent on one industry, you need to start looking at other industries that have potential for growth here and focus on those.
What other kinds of impacts do you hear about from your county councils or commissioners throughout the state?
One of the big ones was that the maps that were showing the drought, there are two kinds of data. There's qualitative data and quantitative data, and the maps were showing the quantitative data in Utah, but there were various Farm Service Agency offices that were saying the qualitative data that we're getting, like wells going dry, that type of thing, doesn't seem to match what the map is. And so then they can take this qualitative data back in to the scientists and say, let's review this because this is what we're seeing. And Colorado actually has a process that they use that's called ground truthing, where they deliberately match the qualitative and quantitative data. So I think we'll see that in Utah moving forward.
It's, you know, it's a relatively big state. There's a huge amount of rural area, as you were just saying. I imagine it's hard to get kind of the as much precipitation data, as detailed a level of precipitation data as we might want, or even conditions of local aquifers or groundwater.
Right. Well, so we have sent out an invitation, and this was something that I think was of interest to the Swander Echo Center and hopefully to some of your listeners. There is an opportunity for volunteers to participate in precipitation data, and there's a group called the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network, which is a mouthful. So they just call it CocoRes. And for $30 or $40, you can get a monitor and you can download an application. And every day you go out and monitor if there has been some rain, you put that into this application and it goes right into a database that is stored up at Utah State University. And then they can use that to supplement the other data that's being gathered.
So how do I get involved? Do I have to buy something?
You will have to invest $30 or $40.
Okay.
The real investment is your time. You need to commit to doing it every day. So it could be a high school science teacher that wants to have a project like that going. Or it could just be somebody that wants to be a part of a process like this. This organization has been around longer than almost any other precipitation gathering organization in the U.S. So you're part of something that has a long history that's being done across the nation. And I think sometimes when we can go from our climate-controlled cars to our climate-control offices and homes, we aren't really aware of the weather unless it impacts us in another way. And so if you just want to have the opportunity to be more aware of what's happening in your area as far as weather changes.
Well, we have a pretty good history of finding volunteers for these citizen science projects on the show. If people are interested in, you know, getting involved, do they sign up? Do they contact somebody? Give us the nuts and bolts on that.
Okay, they would go to a website, and it's CocoRahs.org.
That's the CocoRahs.
CocoRahs.
Okay.
And you'll get information about the national organization, but then you can also click on a map of the U.S. and get all of the Utah region leaders. And so you look where your county is and you contact that region leader and they'll help you go through the process.
Are there certain parts of the state that are in more need of these individuals than others?
I would say some of the more remote rural areas, the West Desert, so Millard County, Juab County, on those West Deserts. And so we will be helping get the word out to some of those more remote areas.
Right. Okay. Now, again, and as Nell was saying, obviously it's big state, large physical differences geographically. Is the entire state in a drought condition?
It is. On October 15th, this drought response committee did make a recommendation to the governor to declare the entire state a state of emergency due to drought.
And so what does that trigger? You know, we hear this declaration. What does that mean on the ground?
Okay. One of the important things is our food supply. And so the federal government does have programs when there's extreme drought that help compensate industries that are impacted or communities that are impacted, their water supply. And that can be tens of thousands of dollars that if the drought is is monitored and showing correctly, they're able to apply for those federal programs. But if not, then maybe they wouldn't. So we just moving forward want to make sure that we are covering all the bases around the state.
And how long does the declaration last for? Is it in place for a certain time period or?
That's a good question. And I won't know until they end it. I know that we are going to be meeting again in January. So each of us will come back and report to each other what we've done since then. But I think I'm looking forward to that because the conversations on wildfires and what we can do to respond more quickly, to maybe help reduce fuel loads, working with our federal partners to come up with plans. As we move forward, I think this is something NOAA did tell me yesterday that they check every 10 years and they compare these 30-year increments of time and data, and it is progressively getting drier and drier. So I think we need to address this.
We're speaking with Linda Clark Gilmore. She's the Director of Office of Rural Development, also the Associate Managing Director of Urban and Rural Business Services. And we're talking about the drought and how you out there, our listeners, or so we're interested, can get involved in becoming a drought monitor or precipitation observer or monitor, I guess. and we'll give you the specifics on how you can do that, and again, in a little bit. Do you recall, Linda, the last time we were in a drought emergency like this?
It was about 10 years ago.
10 years ago? Mm-hmm. Okay. And it went for, we don't know how, you don't recall how long, but that's when it was the last time it was declared.
That was the last time it was declared.
Okay.
So is, you mentioned wildfire a couple of times. Is that one of the most common concerns that you're hearing from the counties around the state?
It is. Not just the counties, but also the businesses. But what's interesting about that, I don't think the number of wildfires is more, but the wildfires are more at the level of a catastrophic wildfire. So we're seeing more homes and structures being burned where we were able to contain those fires in a different weather pattern.
Right. But again, it also goes to agricultural practices and other, even recreational situations like we have up here. Everyone's impacted by the lack of water.
Right.
And the issues.
Travel is impacted because they had to close canyons a number of times. People who have cabins and don't have buffers around their cabins. I think people who are probably that own property in these areas, they also need to be aware of setting their own, creating their own safety, fire safety zone around their cabins. And Summit County does have quite a few second homes and cabins.
Right.
I'm sure this is an important thing for them to address.
Another thing, impacts that we've heard about from some of our other climate reports that we've covered on the show is loss of productivity due to heat. So in agricultural communities where you have, you know, folks that are working out on these farms, they can't work as long or as hard because it's just so hot. Is that something that's being discussed here? Have we hit that point yet?
I think people in agriculture are used to being outside, and so our bodies are actually more resilient than we give them credit for. We do adjust to heat and cold if we're out in it. But I would say they're getting less water for their acre feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think agriculture is looking both at maybe examining which crops they plant, how they water.
Water rights? Such a Byzantine process here in the state.
The water rights, Utah is
that's a whole nother conversation.
That's
know,
a whole nother conversation.
But that has to be in play.
Yeah. Well, some of the things that I've been seeing in the agriculture, the changes as it has to do with water, is if you're driving, and so you can kind of watch for these things. It used to be that most of the canals that were supplying water to fields were dirt. And so one of our favorite things used to be to go gather asparagus. So some of your older listeners may remember going to central Utah and being able to walk up and down the ditch banks and get wild asparagus. It's incredible. But they have gradually gone more and more to cement ditches. And just recently on a trip to southern Utah, I noticed that some fields were installing some large PVC pipes that would go underground so that that water never even has a chance to evaporate. And so those are things that we can do. They cost, but they're saving our resource. They're using our resource more wisely. And then I think we could talk about our individual responsibilities.
Good.
And this is one thing that the governor did remind people when he made this declaration, and that is that each of us can be more careful about the water that we use. You don't need to let the water run while you're brushing your teeth. You probably don't, if you're monitoring precipitation, whether you do it officially with COCORAS or not, you should be watching the weather and looking to see how much water has fallen. You don't need to water your lawns every day, and it's better if you water those lawns when it's not hot. And if you're out walking, I'm sure you've seen houses where it's rolling down the gutter. If you
watering
have sprinklers,
the
please go out and see what's happening. If you're running your sprinklers really early in the morning, get up early and go see what they're doing, because we can't just turn the other way and think it's somebody else's responsibility.
No, we all play a role. But we also have to understand that in this state, the vast majority of water that's used is by the agricultural industry. And the single largest crops that we grow here in the state is mostly alfalfa and hay for feed. So there are water practices they can employ too.
I would think so. And just so that maybe your listeners understand a little bit more why alfalfa is grown.
Yeah.
So we live in a state where you have a summer, spring, winter, and fall. So you can't just get you can't have an animal out on pasture all year long. There are going to be one or two months where you're going to have to feed the animal.
Right.
But one of the things that is beautiful that I think it's good to understand is that those animals are out on public land for much of the rest of the year and private land, and they're part of the answer to the fire hazard, because if you can get sheep or cattle to go in and mow, it's just like mowing your lawn or creating that fire perimeter around your home. Those animals can go in and they eat the fire.
The fuel for the fire.
And then that also produces a lot of food for the state. And so it's kind of a symbiotic way for the state to, we raise enough beef to feed our own state, or proteins. And that is in part because of the public lands and the way we mow them and use them. And again, I do come from an animal background.
Yes.
My husband and I raise sheep, and we actually sold our lamb up here. We were the co-founders of the Morgan Valley Lamb.
Oh.
And so we were part of the local food movement and the farmers markets. And Park City is actually a great place to go for farmers markets.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, I don't know if I'm helping or hurting the problem. I don't eat meat. I stopped eating meat.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm helping with on the water consumption end, but maybe not so much on the fuel consumption end. So it's a tricky equation.
You know, but I see more people along the Wasatch Front choosing part of their yard to be a food producing part of their yard.
Yes.
Instead of just ornamentals. And so I think we're all taking steps.
Yes. And let's put it this way. Everything is changing.
It is.
Right.
And it is.
So let's go back again, and how do people get involved to be? I'm sorry.
Well, before we wrap up, I wanted to ask, you know, were there any impacts that you've heard about from this drought that the counties are reporting back, or municipalities or businesses, that surprised you, that you or the committee thought, we didn't anticipate hearing about that?
I actually expected more response.
Uh-huh.
The people who did respond were very passionate. I just don't know if people were aware of this and were paying attention to it until the governor declared that state of emergency. And so our communication with our partners doesn't end because he declared that state of emergency. I would say it began right before then, and it will continue.
Okay.
I just had a thought. I wonder if that state of emergency has impacted snowmaking efforts here. That's a question that we can perhaps pose
to
local ski resorts.
That's right.
They use tremendous amounts of water in their snowmaking operations. And that trend is going up year over year, too. So
right.
We have to look into that.
Well, the cost to produce snow artificially like that.
It's their biggest energy, part of their energy bill too.
Right.
On a monthly basis. So there's that knock-on effect there too. So now
now we can wrap up.
So remind us again, if there's listeners out there who are interested in participating in this program, how do they do it?
They go to cocoraz.org, which is cocoraz.org.
And how much time each day does this take? It has to be done every day or every time there's precipitation.
Depends how far away you put your monitor, but it's as easy as going out and picking up your paper. It's that easy.
Okay.
You go out, you look at your monitor, you get on your phone, you enter that level into an application that you download, and you're done. And if you go out of town, you can have a neighbor come over and do it.
Right. But that has to be done the same time each day or something like that to be consistent.
That information will all be on the website. And then I would suggest that people, instead of just ordering the packets, that they also call the regional representative and talk to them, because they would have done it. The woman that I talked to from Southern Utah told me that she had been doing this for quite a few years, and they have 6 full-time people just in Washington County. So I think we would be surprised to see how many people are already doing it, but we hope to have quite a few more.
It's neat. There's a map when you look on the website online. Mm. You can see where it is being done. Oh. And, you know, if you do it, you'll be on there. Your data will be visible for others to see.
Is Swanner doing it?
We're not. I think maybe we need to think about it.
Don't you have a weather station?
No, we don't.
Oh, okay.
Mm-mm. Wow. Okay, and the Farm Service Agency offices have also decided to get into the game, so you're not the only one that had this great idea.
How about that?
Why aren't we doing this?
Right.
So you would be a wonderful example as people come to visit your center, and maybe you could even answer some of their questions.
That's
some
right.
member will support that. We'll purchase a $30 or $40 piece of equipment.
Sponsor the precipitation data at Swanner Eco Center.
Thank you, Nels.
Done.
And thank you, Chris, too.
Well, thank you, Linda Clark Gilmore, Director, Office of Rural Development with State of Utah. Thanks so much for sharing us. And you know what? We may have you back on, too, to give us an update.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
All right, that's a deal.
Thanks, Linda.
All right, let's take a break for a couple of sponsors. We got a couple of news items when we come back. Stay with us. It's This Green Earth.
Christmas is a special time with food, family, and friends, and listening to Christmas music through it all.
Bring the KPCW family home with you this holiday. Starting Christmas Eve at 4 p.m. and all Christmas Day, KPCW will present Christmas Around the World.
Holiday music programming you won't hear anywhere else.
It's KPCW's present to you, our listeners, made possible by a generous donation from O.C. Tanner Jewelers, purveyor of fine jewelry and timepieces since 1927. O.C. Tanner Jewelers.
Hi, I'm Beth Armstrong, Executive Director of People's Health Clinic. Are you looking for the perfect gift this holiday season? Consider making a donation to People's Health Clinic, a local nonprofit and KPCW supporter, dedicated to providing medical care to the uninsured and impact 2 lives. By honoring someone special and making a contribution in their name, you will be paying tribute to that person and helping a community member get the care they need to stay healthy. To make a donation, visit peopleshealthclinic.org and hit donate.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And, you know, Chris and I cover environmental issues every week, and often we have some hard news to hear. So we always like to share with you when we get to hear the good stuff.
Yeah.
And we have some good news this week about the growth of solar-based power being installed on rooftops of homes.
Yeah, I was just poking around, doing some research, and got this off of the U.S. Department of Energy's website, a couple other websites. The number of homes with solar systems installed has been increasing rapidly. This is in the U.S. from 30,000 in 2006.
30,000.
That was not. Remember, that was the show we started the show about that.
Yeah.
First the Arctic Report card too. So 30,000 in 2006 to 1.3 million as of 2016.
Wow.
50-fold increase or so. That's by a study done by the Department of Energy. And the DOE predicts at those rates that we could reach 3.8 million homes by 2020. That's an increase of 2.5 million homes just in the over these four-year period. That's astounding.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
It is encouraging. People, speaking of, you know, people's individual role and the power you have to make a difference, what an amazing thing you can do.
Exactly.
And in many cases, it pays for itself. There's a good payback.
Right. There's that return on investment.
Yeah.
That's usually some anecdotally.
Right.
6-7 years or so.
Right.
Or so.
Not a hugely long time.
No. And of course, the price of solar panels come down. Year over year, which makes it more attractive.
Right.
Some
the
states offer
improving
tax credits, et cetera. But looking at that, at those numbers, that's an average of 600,000 homes per year installing solar systems on their roof, just rooftop, not municipal level or utility level solar. That's roughly 1,500 installations per day, every day of the year.
I like that perspective.
Right. Now, there's roughly 70 million single detached homes in the U.S., and so there's a small percentage still.
Huge opportunity for
but
growth.
There you go.
That's how we'll look at that, right?
Back in 2012, years ago, it was less than 0.01%, and now we're up to, well, by 2020, if we get to 3.8 million, that would be roughly 5% of all the single detached homes in the U.S. having some form of solar panels on their roofs.
When you think of the interest in growth and that in our area, right, even in a state or in a town where you have to deal with things like snow and forests, and we don't have long daylight hours all year round,
right,
and still it makes financial sense people to do this, and there's been a lot of enthusiasm. So it's not hard for me to imagine that it would be really attractive.
Right. So it's really encouraging because every solar panel that is up and operating means that much less coal and natural gas that we burn here to produce electricity. So we're making a difference with respect to our fossil fuel demand and consumption here in the state. So
we always love to hear that.
All right. Let's take one more break and then we'll wrap up.
It's time to wrap up.
We'll be right back.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by the generosity of our Broadcasters Club. KPCW would like to recognize Broadcasters Club members Jim and Stacy Hogan, Dana and John Lanigan, Bryn and Jackie Carey. Thank you for your support of local community radio and happy holidays.
Okay, it's time to wrap things up. First, let's thank our guests.
That's right. During the first half of the show today, we heard from the lead author of NOAA's 2018 Arctic Report Card, Dr. Emily Osborne.
That's right. And open water at the North Pole by 2040.
That's right.
That was the one
thing.
That
was Chris's takeaway.
Unbelievable.
And I have to put a plug in for the Arctic Report webpage. It's really accessible and interesting to take a quick look at. You don't have to, like, you know, go through a 100-page PDF or anything.
No,
like
they have
that.
Great so summary. It's a report card. It's a nice summary. And it's you can just search on Arctic Report Card and find it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how I found it.
And our second guest, Linda Clark Gilmore, Director, Office of Rural Development, talking about how you can be involved in collecting precipitation data for the state.
That's right. To help with the state's drought response.
All right. And of course, our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible, they include Recycle Utah,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, always, listeners like you. We always want to get your thoughts and ideas for topics that Nell and I could cover. We do our best to do this every week. After the show, we'll walk into the green room and say, what do you want to do next
week?
What
do you want to do?
Send us your thoughts and ideas on topics you'd like us to cover to our email address, thisgreenearth, all one word, at kpcw.org.
And we should mention quickly, we actually have a brief hiatus from the show for the
next
few weeks. We have Christmas Day and New Year's Day. We will not be on the air, so you're going to have to wait
until
January.
I don't know what you're going to do.
What will you do? This is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City.
Here's NPR News.